I would like you all, if you're going to be having side conversations, to please hold them outside the room. We have some amount of business to transact and yet another committee after operations committee to be heard. With that, this is Jake McKenzie from representing the county and nine cities of Sonoma County, chair of the operations committee. It would seem that I've been careless and I've lost my vice chair. He went to the legislature, so we are going to proceed with the business of this committee. And do we have a quorum?
Yes, we have a quorum.
Okay, thank you. We have a consent calendar, and I would ask committee approval of the consent calendar.
Second.
We have a motion from Haggerty and a second from Halstead to approve the consent calendar. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes. Agenda item number three, we have a contract, Freeway Service Patrol, various tow companies. This is for committee approval, and do we have a staff report, please?
Yes. Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Stephanie Powell with the Freeway Service Patrol Program. Today, I'll be seeking your approval of 16 new tow contracts for 16 existing FSP beats. I'll just be briefly summarizing my memo, which is in front of you, so feel free to follow along. In September, I informed this committee of the upcoming request for qualifications and bid invitation. And that same month, we released the RFQBI to over 300 tow vendors and held two bidders conferences. This RFQBI is a three-step qualifications-based low bid process in which bidders must pass each step in order to move on to the next. So under the first step, qualifications, we reviewed 19 bids to ensure the meeting of minimum requirements, which include at least 3 years of FSP and CHP rotation tow experience, and that the bidders must have an office within 20 minutes of the beat. In reviewing these bids, one bidder did not meet the minimum requirements. They did not have the minimum years of experience, but the remaining 18 were allowed to proceed on to the next step. In the second step, CHP and MTC Safe conducted a vehicle and facility inspection, respectively, to ensure the management style was up to FSP standards. One bidder was disqualified during the vehicle inspection, but that disqualification was later overturned after review of an appeal. So all 18 bidders were allowed to move on to the last step, which is submitting of the price proposal. At the close of Step 3, we received 17 price proposals. One bidder decided not to move on with the procurement process. And in December, the FSP partners, which consist of Caltrans, CHP, in addition to MTC Safe, met to review each price bid. And as a group, we recommend that 13 of the 16 contracts be awarded to the lowest bidder, while the remaining three contracts go to the second lowest bidder for the following reasons. In Beat 25, the lowest bidder was ultimately disqualified because they submitted the incorrect performance guarantee. So we recommend that Beat 25's contract go to the second lowest bidder. And then for Beat 4 and Beat 26, the lowest bidder exceeded the beat limitation, which is designed to ensure that contractors aren't overextended beyond their capabilities. So we also recommend that these two beats go to the second lowest bidder. In summary, staff is seeking approval of 16 four-year contracts in the total amount not to exceed $18,495,835, which is equivalent to $4,623,959 per fiscal year. The complete breakdown of each contract's amount is listed in your memo, but I'll be happy to answer any questions you guys may have.
Okay, and do you have a recommendation for the committee?
Yeah. Recommendation is to approve the 16 four-year contracts.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's okay, Mr. Haggerty. We'll get to
Thank
our
you.
Business.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any questions?
Yes, over here. Right here, next to you.
You?
Yeah.
Please proceed,
Commissioner. What would be helpful, first of all, I think this program is really not publicized as well as it should be. I mean, this is a huge benefit to the people that we represent, and I just wish somehow we could really just get it out there, billboards or whatever, so people know that, you know, there's assistance out there if they get into trouble. Having said that, one of the things that concerns me, and from the staff report today, I can't really get at, is that I would like to see, and I realize we're doing this based on bids, but intuitively one would think that somebody that is close to that area could probably bid lower. But it would be helpful to me just to take a few. Kinsbet Towing in Beat 1, I would like to know where they're coming from to get to Beat 1 or where they are located, and like Red Hill Towing, where they're located, so I can see that, yes, they are located within the proximity of the area they're going to be serving, or they're not. And then whether or not I'll make the judgment then for myself personally as to whether I think it's right for somebody from Santa Rosa to be going down to San Jose to do this service. Do you see what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah,
so that would just be helpful in the future on the staff reports.
Okay. Yeah, one of the requirements under this RFQBI was that the bidder had to be 20 minutes from the beat. So we did lower the requirement. It used to be 30 minutes because we did want what you were saying. We wanted tow vendors from that community servicing that beat. So, for example, Kinbetz is located in Oakland.
Good. Yeah. If we could, I mean, I certainly appreciate that. I think that's excellent. But if we could see that, I think, in future proposals in front of us, I think, you know, if it says Kinbetz, Oakland, that would be helpful. Just so we know.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. I'll move the item.
Thank you, Commissioner. It's moved. Is it Carter? Yeah, let me just find out. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, it's seconded. Under discussion, Commissioner Licardo.
Thank you, Ms. Shake. The 130,000 assists that are described in the report, does that mean there's 130,000 times when a tow truck actually showed up to help a motorist who is?
Correct. So that assist does not necessarily mean they helped a motorist. They could have also pick up some road hazard and also providing tow. So let me start over. The 130 assists includes motorist assist and also tagging of vehicles, picking up road hazard. So it's just any time a tow contractor has stopped to provide an assist.
Great, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Having heard that, any further discussion? Seeing no indication of that, all those in favor of approving this matter, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Nobody opposed. That matter passes. We now come to agenda item number 4. This is a Clipper program contract. This is continuation of matters that have been in front of this committee, and I would ask that Lynn Valdivia give the staff report, please.
Commissioner McKenzie, if I may, before I hand things over to Lynn to present the item, Carol Kuster, I just had a couple of quick updates about the Clipper program. First, we've had, I'm sorry to report, two back-end outages in the past 2 months. Neither of those affected cardholders' ability to board transit, but it did mean that cardholders weren't able to add value on the web or to conduct transactions through the customer service center. So we just want to convey today that we do take this obviously very seriously, and we're working aggressively with the contractor on fixes. Cubic's working to identify root causes so that we can react quickly if these situations arise again, or better yet, eliminate them entirely. So just wanted to bring that to your attention. Second, your memo includes, in addition to the action item, an update on our review of Clipper privacy policies. So our goal is really to very actively protect customers' privacy while also preserving our ability to use anonymous trip data to improve our program going forward. We're continuing to explore the cost and technical implications of reducing our current data retention period, which is 7 years, to something much closer to 3 or 4 years, and to align that data retention policy with fast-track policies. And we're also looking to remove card serial numbers, which are considered PII, from the data set so that we can, again, retain anonymous trip data for planning and analysis purposes. And we'll be back with specific recommendations on that front in March.
Before we go further, any questions of staff on this item? Seeing none, let's move to our contract actions, please.
Very good.
Okay, well, I'm here to present on the Clipper contract actions today. I just want to start out with saying that we're very pleased to be moving forward with the first group of bus operators in Phase 3. And this short presentation is just to clarify the three items that are on today's agenda for Clipper. So as you recall, Phase 3 is the final phase of the Clipper rollout and includes 18 of the smaller transit agencies in the Bay Area. We were here last January presenting a proposed approach for the rollout of these operators, and We focused on the rollout, focused on streamlining the rollout to contain costs, and the cost containment would be obtained by offering simplified and standardized set of business rules and consolidating the 18 transit operators into four groups based on geographic region, and then implementing each of the groups as a single Clipper operator, rather than creating 18 new operators in the system. So our recommended rollout order from last year was first the ferries, and this implementation was completed in June. Second group would be the Napa and Solano operators, shown in green. The third group was East Bay operators in red on the map, and the fourth group was the 101 corridor operators. We also had two stragglers, Marin Transit and Union City Transit, and we proposed rolling these operators into existing Clipper operators. Marin Transit would become a part of Golden Gate Transit, since Golden Gate already provides most of their service, and then Union City Transit would be rolled into AC Transit. And last January, we proposed implementing Union City and Marin Transit with the Napa and Solano group. So over the past year, we've been working closely with the Napa and Solano County operators, Marin Transit and Union City Transit, to define the requirements and ensure that their current fare policies fit within the streamlined offering. We developed the scope of work and received pricing from the Clipper contractor, Cubic, back in late August. However, because the pricing received was quite a bit higher than we expected, the negotiations got complex, so staff decided to focus on Napa and Solano County to keep the process moving as quickly as we could. So today we're here to seek approval to proceed with the Napa and Solano County operators. The cost of the Napa and Solano County implementation is $2.3 million, and funding will come from three sources. The City of Fairfield and the City of Vacaville will be contributing funds, and then the remaining amount will be coming from the Clipper budget. So to summarize today's actions, we are seeking approval to execute a change order with the Clipper contractor, Cubic Transportation Systems, in the amount of $2.3 million. And second, item 4B, we are seeking approval to enter into a cooperative agreement with Fairfield to accept their funds in the amount of $741,000 to contribute to the implementation. And third, seeking approval to enter into a cooperative agreement with Vacaville to accept funds of $160,000 for the implementation. And I'm happy to answer any questions anyone might have.
Thank you. Thank you for that staff report. Are there questions, Commissioner Haggerty?
So what happens to Union City?
We're going to return to Union City and Marin Transit. We have all the pricing for them, and we need to now negotiate those with Cubic.
When do you anticipate them coming back?
With the negotiations, within the next month or two.
Oh.
Okay. Vice Chair Worth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that presentation. And I think the Clipper program has been such a huge success. You know, riders love it. My kids come home from vacation, and I keep giving them Clipper cards, and I don't know where they end up, but I think we have about 10 now on our account. But anyway, I wanted to ask, first of all, I want to thank staff for working with the businesses. We have a number of corporate entities in Contra Costa County that provide transit incentive benefits to their tenants and the businesses in those parks, and I know you've worked really hard to work with them, and we really appreciate that. So that brings me to my next question of the big red portion in this map, and I understand that this contract was predicated on the idea that there is existing inventory of equipment, and so now in order to move to the larger, you know, next phase systems was to look at developing, you know, the new equipment, the new inventory, and that kind of thing. So this came up at our transit meeting the other day, and I just wanted to get a sense from you, as we're approving this contract, what we can expect in the timeline for the East Bay transit operators. And my hope is the cost will continue to reduce. And the other question is, What are we doing to ensure that the services we're getting from Cubic are cost-effective? Obviously, we have a master contract with them. But theoretically, these costs should be starting to drop because we have the system in place. We're really just adding to an existing system. So a couple of big questions, if you might be able to answer, that'd be helpful.
Commissioner, I think I'll ask Carol and Lynn to take the second, and I'll take the first. I think the short answer on the remaining systems, and that's not just the red blob, it's also the blue blob up there in the North Bay,
right,
is I think we're going to need to pursue something like the model we had with these two cities in Solano, which is cost sharing. We simply are out of budget with Clipper. You know, the estimate we put together of what Phase 3 would cost was done several years ago, and there are so many demands on Clipper, and the big one we're trying to manage now is the fact that some of the large systems are looking to get deeper into their customer base. You know, Muni wants a Lifeline, fair product, and I'll tell you, the number of customers we can get with that in San Francisco is far larger than any of these smaller systems. But we understand that this is a regional program, and we're trying to get a regional system put into place, but we're juggling a lot of balls. And so I think what we will need for both the East Bay and North Bay operators remaining is some creativity on their part about bringing some money to the table to augment what we have in the Clipper budget so we can stretch the cloth to fit. And Lynn, Carol, can you cover the cost question?
The timing issue?
Well, the issue about why isn't the price cheaper, as I understood the question.
Well, I guess I wish that our contractor were here to address that question themselves. I can tell you that we're working with Cubic right now to do a better job of aligning what staff's initial cost estimates are with the estimates that we ultimately get, because it makes it very challenging to budget this program when the cost estimates that we develop are orders of magnitude less than what we ultimately receive. I can tell you that in this particular case, we have negotiated line item by line item with Cubic. There are hundreds, despite the fact that these agencies are smaller than Muni and BART, there are still hundreds of different vehicle types that require very specific kinds of manufacturing and brackets to install the equipment. We managed to bring the bid price down very slightly in the range of $100,000 or $200,000, but it wasn't much more than that. So I can tell you on the second issue about, you know, if money were no object, how quickly could we get through the remainder of the Phase 3 operators? Because money's not the only constraint, there are also other resource constraints. We would be looking at 2015 or 16, but we do first need to address the resource issue. You
know, if you want to add. Any other questions? Commissioner Kwan?
So just a quick question. The amount that we are charging is mostly going to our subcontractor who issues the actual mechanics of the Clipper cards and then takes care of the billing and financing? Well, I'm looking at the pie chart. That's like...
Yeah, I'm sorry. So what...
So I'm just saying, is this typical that we cover about 60% of the costs of the operations of the Clipper cards?
Commissioner, the pie chart is just the capital cost for putting the system in. But we also do share the operating cost with the operators themselves. So we pay generally the fixed operating cost, and they pay a variable fee according to how many transactions their customers use the system.
So it's variable depending on the system?
Yeah. The bigger systems have more transactions, they pay more. The smaller systems.
So how much do we subsidize? I'm just trying to get a sense.
Well, the fixed operating cost is a very considerable number. I'm trying to remember about how much a year do we pay in that, Lynn?
I have both numbers. It's close to $2 million a month for all of the operating costs. And off the top of my head, I don't recall which portion of it is
$2 million
fixed.
A month.
It's about half. It's
about 50-50, 60-40, something like that.
So are there any systems in the country or in the world where these cover themselves by collecting other fees or other uses?
Probably the closest that we come to that is in Hong Kong,
where octopus
the transit
card,
market is so large that the operator of that system, actually the authorities there have threatened to regulate them as a bank because they have so much market power.
So actually that's where I was going, because they used to call it the kangaroo card before it was called the octopus card. They keep changing the animal each time I go to Hong Kong. But there's so many uses, and you know, some of you may know that we're doing a Muni ID card that has a debit function on it, and that's going to totally cover our cost of the Muni ID, and we're going to put our library cards on it, we're going to put other things on it. So I'm wondering if we're looking at that model. So that's just one question that's probably beyond the scope here. And then secondly, are we looking at the I think the way you would get more people to use the card is if we could blend and give a small discount when people have to go use two systems. So for a lot of working class people, if they have to take BART and then take the bus, then that's too expensive. They just would rather take the BART and walk, or they'll just take the bus. And I'm just wondering whether or not, particularly for those people in I guess, Arizona, particularly San Francisco, I think, and probably future in San Jose, when you get your BART line, right, having to pay two fares for two systems just to get to work costs probably some of the poorer people a higher part of their income. So I'm wondering whether or not we're looking forward maybe into giving a discount, and then you might get more people to buy into the card. Because more people would use it. Because the reason people in Hong Kong use, my aunt lends me hers every time I go to Hong Kong, is because you can do everything. I can go to the ferry, I can take the subway, I can pay parking if I'm driving, you can pay tolls if you're taking the bridge in Hong Kong. It really is. And plus that, I can buy my coffee at the Star Ferry, right? And so you're really motivated to use it. So I'm wondering if we can't make the Clipper card So simple, right? So that I can have this one card when I go see Ed Lee on BART, and then, you know, when I go see Tom on AC Transit, you know, that it just, so by increasing its use and volume, therefore we can get it to pay for itself.
Commissioner, I think that may be a tall order. First of all, we have so many systems in the Bay Area. But secondly, you know, the transit market in the United States is just, except for New York, is such a small fraction of travel, whereas in Asia, Hong Kong is probably the best example. It commands such a large share of the market that all of these other folks are lining up to get into the Clipper program. You know, Fast Track is probably a better example here, the one that where we collect the toll revenue, because San Francisco Airport very quickly wanted to be part of that program. But the contract we have now with Cubic runs through 2019. We have begun to talk to them and talk to other folks in the industry. Chicago right now is probably at the forefront of this, of a very significant change in the business model that would explore some of the things you're discussing. Very quickly on your other point, I just wanted to mention that we should be coming back to you fairly shortly with some ideas that we're working on with BART and AC Transit for something like the Muni BART Fast Pass in San Francisco for the East Bay. And we've been working on that with them for several months now. And that is something that Clipper allows us to do. But remember, Clipper is just a device. The fare policies that go into it are set by individual transit boards. And very often, as you say, those fare policies are what the barrier to transit is, not the fact that you have to use five different cards. So look forward to that in the next several months.
I'm sorry to hear that we're tied in for so long. I hope we can talk to our current operator to see if we can upgrade the cards. It's just, I think the world of cards, since I've done so much research on the Muni ID, is changing very, very quickly, and that there are a lot of income opportunities possibly.
Thank you, and thank you, Executive Director. Thank you, staff.
Are you ready for a motion, Mr. Chairman?
Always ready for a motion.
Okay, I'd like to move the staff recommendation. I also want to thank and commend the staff for moving forward with the rural operators. You know, the more we can make this system seamless, the more ridership we're going to get coming out of the rural counties into the Bay Area, you know, when you have that certainty that you've got a pass, you just swipe it, I think it's going to be, you know, a tremendous step forward into how we can promote riderships in the rural counties. So I move the item, Mr. Chairman.
And there's a second? Yes?
Second, and just say that it does make people feel like they're part of the region when they can use a regional pass.
Any further discussion on this matter? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the recommendation, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes, and thank you very much. Thank you for the staff report and the updates. Thank you, Mr. Executive Director, for your more cosmic comments. And we will move to agenda item number five. This is an item that has come before this committee last September, and while before I introduce Melanie Cruddy and her companion, her partner there, I just wanted to say that I was asked to form an ad hoc subcommittee, and Commissioner Halstead agreed to serve with me in that subcommittee. We have had an opportunity to meet a couple of times with staff, both our own staff from MTC and from Caltrans, and the report that you're going to receive, an informational report, is one with which we associate ourselves. Is that correct, Commissioner Halstead?
Yes.
We do. And so we're very pleased to have a tandem here today, and I think as you hear the report, you'll understand why. So, Melanie, could you introduce your partner there and then make the presentation?
Good morning, Commissioners. Absolutely. Sitting to my right is Dan McElhaney. He's the Deputy District Director for Caltrans District 4. And our plan this morning is to give a joint presentation and hopefully be available to answer any questions collectively at the conclusion of our presentation. So just quickly, at the September Operations Committee meeting, we gave a joint presentation on the performance of the traffic monitoring systems on along Bay Area freeways. And I think to summarize, the feedback was that commissioners were shocked at the state of the system and directed staff to go off and do further research and come back with some recommendations about how to improve the performance of the system. So today we're providing an interim report on the work to date that we've done and where we're kind of heading with our findings. So what I'll be doing in the next couple of slides is just talking about a further clarification about to define the problem to hopefully illustrate it better. And then I'll turn the mic over to Dan, and he'll talk about the state of the system for this quarter and some of the near-term Caltrans plans. Then I'll take it back over and talk about some funding and governance options for this committee to consider in the future. So this next slide is hopefully telling the story in a simple way. We all know that the SHOP program is oversubscribed for its many responsibilities that it needs to deliver throughout the state transportation system. I would assert that the traffic management system is one of the kind of the lower on the list and more of a victim to this oversubscription. That what this graph is hoping to depict is that as we have continued to increasingly add more assets, more inventory to the traffic monitoring system throughout our freeways, we have not seen a commensurate growth in the resources at Caltrans to operate it, to manage it, and to ensure that it's maintained. And in fact, you can see since 2000 that rather than even holding steady, that those staff resources have diminished over time. And so this is not only a problem, but it's a growing problem. This next slide is going to try and do a lot. I first want to try and make sure that everyone understands what we're talking about, performance problems in the transportation management system, what it is we're talking about, and then explain a little bit about who's responsible for doing what, and then lastly talk about some future initiatives we have that may further compound the problem. So starting off here, the three boxes are showing the elements of what we're calling the transportation management system. And this system is intended to improve the performance of the freeway, to combat congestion in low-cost effective ways. And in September, when we talked about field equipment, the box on the upper right story, that was where the focus of the performance problems were. But when you look at the TMS, it does encompass other activities of incident management and freeway management. And typically, those responsibilities are centered at the Caltrans District 4 offices at their Transportation Management Center, or their TMC. I'm sure you're familiar with that term. And so collectively, the TMC and the field equipment make up the Transportation Management System. And so while this TMC is located in the Caltrans office, you can see by this from this slide that I'm showing up here with the multiple colors, there actually are quite a few parties responsible for delivering this system. That the red here is illustrating what MTC is responsible for delivering. The blue is Caltrans. And the purple is actually MTC, Caltrans, and CHP. So it does come across as somewhat of a mishmash of responsibilities. And I think that may be, that is certainly one of the issues that we hope to investigate and perhaps provide a more cogent vision and an overarching strategy for about who should be responsible for what. And the last piece here that I'm adding to the slide is to show of those responsibilities where there is an existing agreement. And so you can see that it's just a couple of the items that have a co-op agreement. One has an MOU. And so, again, it does suggest that there's some fragmentation in our overarching vision for managing the transportation system. And then lastly on this slide, I just wanted to illustrate that we think we have a problem today, but tomorrow it's probably going to be a bigger problem. As we go forward with these innovative programs such as the integrated corridor management or express lanes, we know that we need to have active traffic management, and we need to make sure that we have resources in place to manage that. On this next slide, what I want to do is kind of do a little deep dive and talk about the ramp metering and bridge metering in that MOU. There's an MOU over that, and explain that as an example about how fragmented governments and oversight may not be in the best interest of the region. So, ramp metering. I think that it's safe to say now that we can consider it a successful tool in our toolbox for combating congestion, that it's been in place for a while and it's working. In the early days of ramp metering, however, it was a pretty laborious process where we needed to first get funding and parties to install the meters. And so the practice that was adopted when large capital projects were on the freeway, as part of those projects, they installed meters. It was a good idea, a way of getting it done. The challenge there is it didn't always provide usable segments. And in order to get a usable segment, a long enough section of the freeway where it made sense to meter it, it could take a very long time. Another issue is that Caltrans, because there was, in the early days, quite a bit of local resistance to the metering concept, adopted an effective practice that took many years to build that consensus. It was an iterative process where there was before and after quantitative analysis that was repetitive and worked very closely with the locals with the intent of building consensus. And in many cases, that was successful. But as I'll point out on the map here, it didn't always work. So what we're asserting is that given that there are some areas, that many parts of the region where we already have successful metering, that using our past practice doesn't suit us well anymore, that it's not serving the best interests of the region. And to talk about the examples here, on Route 4, you see that red circle out there where there's meters that have been installed since the 1990s there. We were never able to achieve local consensus to activate those meters, and so they just lie there dormant and, in fact, started falling apart. We now have consensus to activate them, but we need to go out there, fix the meters, and get them in a state to activate them. Similar problems are along the Solano 80 and Sonoma 101, where we have those meters in place today, but we have not yet achieved local consensus, so we're not ready to activate them. And then a different problem is in Marin, in the San Rafael area, where there was some big projects there that were supposed to install ramps. The projects went over budget, and so they cut the meters were the first thing to be cut. So now we have a scattershot of meters there that are not able to be operated. And so this is supposed to serve as an example where Caltrans is the lead. MTC was to help facilitate consensus. Clearly, the practice we have in place is not working for the investment we're making there, and we need to think about a different active model for providing more leadership. So now we're going to switch gears a little bit. I'm going to turn the mic over to Dan, and he's going to give us an update, kind of a report card on the performance of the field equipment and talk about Caltrans' near-term activities.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Yeah. Could I ask a question about your map?
Sure.
Does this mean that Santa Clara County has no issues?
Santa Clara has, you know, they have, there's some delays, but I would certainly not characterize it as a top problem.
Okay, so really we're targeting the most significant problems in our region?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Thanks. Welcome, Dan.
Good morning, Commissioners, Chair McKenzie. Welcome to the new Commissioners. I'm Dan McElhaney. I'm your Chief Deputy District Director for Caltrans in the Bay Area, and appreciate the teamwork that we've had with the subcommittee members, Commissioner Halstead and Commissioner McKenzie, as well as MTC staff. We have a long history of excellent teamwork with MTC and MTC staff, so we truly appreciate that. If I could just take you back to a couple of notes to add on slide 3 and 4. Slide 3, of course, we have been doing construction statewide as the state of California and regionally and locally, which has added these TMS elements. And overall, we have not been able to keep up on the maintainability and the maintenance resources needed for that. And that was the indication of this slide is the trend for staffing is down and the need is up. But these aren't specifics overall, but related to our overall maintenance and contract resources. So I wanted to highlight that. On slide 4 for the TMC, over many years, the partnership with MTC, CHP, and Caltrans truly have appreciated that. We have an active freeway management executive committee, and this is an excellent vision as we move forward to continue that teamwork. As you may know, the Traffic Management Center monitors, on average, about 80,000 traffic incidents or roadway-related incidents each year, and about 15,000 on average require response by CHP and Caltrans and Freeway Service Patrol and so forth. So it's a very active traffic management center, and these transportation management systems continue to enhance the reliability and the response time, so they're very critical as we install them and maintain them. Overall, in the RAMP meeting, I wanted to highlight we're making great progress at Contra Costa County, Marin and Solano, and Sonoma, and we appreciate that. If we can go to slide 5, as I mentioned, this is a statewide issue on maintainability, so we developed this slide to show our progress status since September, and as you can see, we have a number of elements still impacting us here in the region, whether it's we've updated our asset inventory so we have better management of it in tracking and monitoring, and making sure that our inventory is shown here, and we're finding that between wire thefts and issues within construction zones and our resources to be able to hit priority issues such as traffic signals and highway lighting and these elements shown here in this slide, we still have a large task ahead of us. And the maintainability, I mentioned that before, these components such as changeable message signs, and CCTV cameras. Some have within 2 years, 2 to 5 years of installation, will have a maintenance-related issue that needs to respond to, and many of the elements have a under 10-year lifespan or 5-year lifespan. So that's something we, as a program approach with MTC and Caltrans, we need to keep in mind and develop, and that was important in our discussions with the subcommittee. Overall, I wanted to highlight the traffic detector stations and a reminder from our September presentation. There is redundancy with the 511 and fast track feeds that provide congestion-related information. So the reliability of the Traffic Management Center and to the traveling public is high, but these detector stations are an important element that we need to continue to improve on. And also private industries such as traffic.com provides feeds that also support 501 and information to the traveling drivers. So we still see a high reliability, but we want to assess where to go with these detector stations in the future. On the next slide, what have we been doing as in teamwork overall since September? We focused on being sure that we look at our overall inventory and develop contract possibilities to get resources out in the field to support both our maintenance electrical engineering and design efforts. The problem is bigger than the resources we have at hand. So as a department, we have developed and finished the scope, cost, and schedule for six new contracts totaling up to $21 million, and we're looking for approval at the department level here this month to cover all nine counties in support of getting out and addressing the needs that you saw in the previous chart. And towards that, as a department, we've focused a new project manager for TOS. He's here today with me. Is Mike Condi. He's got nearly 30 years of service here in the Bay Area, and he's got a strong traffic construction, and he'll be teaming with maintenance and our overall programming staff and part of our MTC Caltrans team to focus project management, scope, cost, schedule, risk management, priority of our resources, and really look at the needs in the Bay Area on TOS as a program versus just a list of maintenance repairs that are needed. And we want to be sure that we're focusing on that as we move ahead. And so I welcome Mike to the effort here in this last quarter. And overall, in the last year, we've had $5 million in additional contracts that were in support of the maintenance effort on these elements. And so I look forward to the approval of this new $21 million effort. And I think we're going to find here in the next quarter a lot of improvement. We're going to find some things in the field that are related to power, that are related to components, and we're going to see significant progress in this next next couple of quarters. Also, we've been evaluating what are the needs in maintenance and what are the needs in electrical engineering, and you can see that here on the slide. But overall, again, I wanted to emphasize that there is a high reliability in the information provided to traveling drivers, but if we work together and teamwork with MTC and teamwork with at the region level as well as at the state level, we can approach this similar to what we've done on the toll rehab program, what we've done on the pavement program, to address the priority needs as an overall effort. So thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
So just wanted to echo that MTC certainly is appreciative of the collaborative attitude that Caltrans is adopting in addressing this problem. I think we collectively agree that their efforts are the right approach for triage. It's not addressing the long-term symptomatic problem of a lack of reliable statewide funding to support the state's responsibilities. And I think that's why collectively we're asserting it's time to have a game changer, that we need to improve and stabilize funding, and we need to improve the oversight and the accountability of the management of the system. And the next slide will be talking about funding, and I think that that really underscores the point that MTC should be looking at taking on more of a managing partner role in this. So to talk about the funding, in Plan Bay Area, we have proposed about $2.7 billion in 28 years for funding of the operations, the management, and the maintenance of the freeway system. Now, by comparison to Transportation 2035, it's about $1 billion more that we're asking for. And that $1 billion of that is for operations. So that's the new piece of the pie, and it is something that we believe can make a real difference here in providing much needed resources. While that's great news, there are some caveats to that. Number one, as you well know, the plan is not adopted. And so while these funds were proposed and included in the preferred scenario of the draft plan, and it ain't over till it's over. And so we certainly hope that we're able to hold the line in this amount. Secondly, we don't think this is enough, that we're going to need to look at other fund sources to help out. While we're still defining what that final number is for what the need is, we think we need to be looking at SHOP providing some level of support, and that perhaps BATA or SAFE or those other fund sources that could serve to supplement the overall need. And then lastly, even if we are successful in getting the Plan Bay Area funds, they're not effective till 2016. So we need to come up with some bridge funds to if we want action earlier than 2016. Next, I wanted to talk a little bit about if we're going to be a managing partner, how would that look? What would oversight and governance look like? And so staff has been very busy researching options throughout the United States for a more joint model for operations. And it turns out there's quite a few examples throughout the United States of successful joint operations. Now, in California, less so. But two of the leading candidates that we've come up is having a JPA, a joint powers agreement, where the parties just kind of down the line jointly fund, manage, operate the system. Another good model is elite operations, where individual agencies continue to have specific leads, but it's defined in a master agreement, so the roles and responsibilities and the accountability is very clearly articulated. And as well, there is a commitment to the shared funding. For both option one and option two, there's good examples. Houston, Transtar has a joint operations, and Las Vegas, Nevada has a agency-led model. The third option is a blended team that Sandag has adopted for project delivery, right, where they have essentially have some seconded staff from Caltrans serve as kind of almost as staff to Sandag to ensure that there's timely delivery of projects. We, in considering these options, we have recommended discarding option three because we think that's too close to our current situation and that it's too much of more of the same. And if we're looking for a game changer, we need to be focusing on something along the lines of one or two. So what we're doing now is really digging into those two options to understand the benefits of a joint operations versus a lead agency, and probably more importantly, the risk of one versus the other. So we do plan to come back to you and with some recommendations at our next meeting about that. But these are game changers. It's very exciting, and I think that we've heard thus far from Bijan, the Caltrans district director, that they are willing to negotiate this type of novel partnership. And it's certainly my hope that we are successful in negotiating this because it really, I think, gives Caltrans the opportunity to show innovation and leadership for financing of an important service that is chronically underfunded throughout the state. And so it's a real opportunity for District 4 to shine on that front. So lastly, I won't go into a lot of detail on that, but we do have a work plan to look at coming up with good cost numbers for defining the agreement and obviously coming up with a funding plan. And then the last slide is just next quarter we expect to come back with some information on near-term funding as well as principles for an agreement. And that concludes our formal portion of the presentation. We'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you very much, both of you, for laying this out. As I had indicated at the beginning, we started down this track after last September. We have moved quite a ways down the track, but this was information, not a decision-making presentation, but I think it's also a chance to show you that, in fact, we are meeting what we promised. There would be quarterly reports on the state of affairs, and secondly, that we would work towards recommendations for action, which we have just heard will be coming back to us. Now, in terms of the presentation you've just heard, are there any questions of staff at this time? Commissioner Kwan, and then Commissioner Liccardo.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I have a lot of rookie questions. So just quickly, I noticed that when you say cooperative, in some places that includes the CHP.
Yes, for example, incident management, in many cases that we've come up with cooperative arrangements for, like FSP, the Freeway Service Patrol, the callbacks, the Incident Management Task Force, those are all three jointly managed by the three agencies, Caltrans, NTC, and CHP.
Perhaps it's a forbidden area, but they're increasingly using things like car scanners to check stolen cars and things like that. And we have all these freeway ramps, et cetera. Have we thought of at all merged technologies to have multi-purposes? It seems to me Homeland Security and the police usually have more money than we do. So I was just wondering whether or not, you know, as we have counters and scanners, whether they could be multifunctional and have the CHP fund them.
I think that's an excellent idea. We certainly, as part of our investigation of other fund sources, we certainly should include Homeland Security and other sources. I think CHP with state funding is suffering from similar issues with Caltrans, but as far as other grants, I think that's something we should be.
It's just that scanners are, we sort of do them just to count the number of cars coming in or for traffic control, but the scanners are so smart now they can do multiple data entry. And I know in Oakland, because of our high rate of stolen cars, we've been putting car scanners in a lot of places just to keep track. So I just think we should think about that in terms of the future.
Absolutely. As I mentioned, we're doing a cost and needs assessment for the whole asset, the set of assets that we have out there. And traffic detection, I think, is a great candidate for doing, like, being smart about multiple purposes for technologies, and that's a key area where we're looking at.
And then the second thing I know from studying crime so much is that streets, homes, locations along major freeway ramps are more likely to get hit. You're more likely to have your car stolen if you live near a freeway entrance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it just seems to me that some kind of combination, some kind of study, some kind of federal grant, it all might be integrated. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Kwan. Commissioner Liccardo.
Thank you. Sure. Thank you very much for the presentation. I want to beg my colleague's indulgence for a moment while I get parochial. I was hoping we could return to that slide that Commissioner Brzezinski asked a question about the map. Everybody else can check their emails if they want. You just had it. There it was. I guess my understanding was Santa Clara County has about half of the active ramp meters in the entire region. Is that right?
So we have a map with the total. So Santa Clara certainly has a large percentage of its freeways with ramp metering on it.
Well, more than that, we have about half of the entire region's operating ramp meters.
That's about correct, Commissioner, yes.
Yeah. So I guess what I'm concerned about is when we look at a map like this, I think all of us are sensitive about funding allocations and attention and so forth. When you look at this map, you probably wouldn't even believe that we have any. And most of the freeways where we have ramp meters aren't even depicted, for instance, 87. I mean, this is focused on urban core corridors, and we've got freeway, for instance, goes right through our downtown in San Jose, the largest city in the region, with ramp meters all over, and it's not on the map. So I guess along with 280, which also has ramp meters, along with 101. So I guess our concern is we're hoping that this map is not somehow or another suggestive of where attention and funding might be going to when we talk about what urban core corridors are with a TMS and where they're not.
This map was intended to highlight where problems are. The fact that Santa Clara has less activity is a sign of the fact that it's successful.
Okay, great. I just wanted to make sure this wasn't a precursor of challenges to come.
And if I might add, and I suspect that Dan is chomping at the bit here, we have been shown on committee some very high detail maps which show the amazing number of ramp metering activities in your bailiwick. Is that correct,
Thank Dan? You for showering us with love, Jake. That's what I want to hear.
I can show you a map after the meeting that has shows all the activated.
We're going to bury you in maps, Liccardo. Vice Chair Worth.
I just want to thank you for that presentation. And I guess I just would love to ask one request. I know we've got a lot of really good data that shows how these traffic management tools reduce congestion. And I know at this point we are focusing on the solution to the problem, but I'm wondering for the purposes of the public and all of us, if we could include in this data some data that shows how this actually why we have these tools and what they do to reduce congestion. And I know they're, you know, when we're looking to the future, recognizing that these corridors are fixed and the only way we can improve use of them and speed and, you know, efficiency and everything is through these tools. So I guess I couldn't say that without, you know, since our CMA director in Contra Costa County is very interested in this whole field. If we could include some of those statistics, I think it presents a compelling case for the public to get behind the investment decisions to encourage the money to maintain these systems.
Absolutely, and I would add that as part of the evaluation for Plan Bay Area, we had to do a lot of the benefit analysis, and so we have very good recent relevant numbers.
Commissioner Halstead?
Could I just add, I think it's really important also that we include data, or at least an intention to have data about the impact on the environment, because that goes right along with the reduction in congestion. Thank you.
Let me just conclude this item I will not conclude this item without hearing from Commissioner Spearing. It would be very impolite impolitic of me.
Well, thank you. I like the direction that we're going here. But this policy that Caltrans has with this local consensus is really counterproductive to managing the corridor. And that policy has really created problems for us. And I'm going to speak to Solano County. To have that understanding with the city of Fairfield, where, you've got elected officials and policymakers taking positions, well, that's not going to get turned on over my dead body. And yet, by not having those on, you're creating a problem in a neighboring city. And so I really think that if you're going to put ramp metering in, there ought to be a policy that says it will be turned on within this period of time, and that you don't need this local consensus. I think you need to mitigate the local concerns. If they're saying they're concerned about it backing up on their local streets, then put in sensors, put in whatever you need to mitigate that issue, but do not have a policy that says we don't turn them on unless we get this local consensus. Because you really, what it does is it constricts the express buses, the carpooling, the vanpooling. I mean, you're penalizing thousands of other commuters because of that policy. And so if Caltrans doesn't have the courage to change it, give somebody else the responsibility. Give it to MTC or somebody else. Let us say that. And I really, if I had my way, I would say that in Solano County, you don't get any bridge toll money unless you get these doggone things turned on.
Second.
And I'm just saying, Dan.
Fortunately, you're totally out of order, but that's okay. But your suggestions are well taken. In Sonoma County, we would.
But it shouldn't be repeated. The point I'm making is let's not continue to put ramp metering in and not getting them turned on. Even if the things are green, leave them on. We need to get them on, and there needs to be an expectation that they will be turned on.
I think you've heard some sense that we would like to be moving in this direction. And so when we come back with recommendations, it would seem appropriate to do that. But I understand, Madam Counsel, that we're not taking action on things today, nor are we allowed to. So we won't, but we will thank staff. We'll thank our staff, Melanie and your guys, and Dan and your guys who are here with us today. Thank you all for being here. And I think the thing that I want to emphasize is that this has been a joint effort. It's not been MTC whacking Caltrans in the head or vice versa. It's been the two of us working together with the subcommittee. We continue to and look forward to working with that and bringing actual action items back to you. So thank you all for your patience. And if Sam Liccardo, I believe you're going to start the proceedings off the legislative committee off after I have said there's no public comment, there's no other business. The next meeting is Friday, February the 8th. I won't be here, and the chair, Chair Tissier, has agreed to chair the operations committee in February, absent the chair, and we don't have a vice chair. So there you go.
Sam.
Excellent work.